The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And today I'm very excited and thrilled that she's joining me because I know she's busy. I know how busy she is. It is Theodore Lee from Theopolis Vineyards. Theodore, thank you so much for joining the show.
I'm happy to be here, Matt. I am glad to be able to share the story of Theopolis Vineyards, but you can call me Theo. That's what all my friends call me.
Okay, perfect. Then from here on out, I shall call you Theo, Queen of the Vineyards, as is on your website. And my first question isn't even about wine. It's really, how do you have time? You're a trial lawyer. You're a partner for a law firm, and you own a small winery, but still makes close to 1,000 cases, mostly Petite Syrah and some Pinot Noir and some whites. But how do you have time for all this?
Well, I have a passion for living, number one. I don't need a lot of sleep. And when you enjoy doing what you do, it really isn't work. And I multitask.
I guess for you, every moment of time is well considered, isn't it?
Every moment of time is occupied. I am here in Dallas caring for my 94-year-old mother. So while I'm dealing with issues relating to her health, her home, managing her life, I'm also on a Zoom call with you. Yep. I have my phone where I'm responding to Gmail because I do wine business after 7 o'clock at night and before 5 o'clock in the morning. And then I do law from about 7 to 7.
Oh my God. Well, let's talk about your family a little bit. I know you've talked about it before. What was the quality of wine growing up at your home with your folks in Texas?
Well, my dad used to take wild muscadine,
yep,
and make homebrew. Now, if you ever tasted muscadine, you would understand why I did not drink wine until I moved to California in the 80s. I consider it sweet cough syrup, which has no appeal to my taste buds. But there are those in the South who love muscadine wine.
I never even heard of it. Them.
Well, look it up.
Yeah.
It grows rampant all throughout the South. And even though I tell people Texas is different from the South, that's one thing they do have in common. They have wild muscadine.
I hadn't heard of it until I was doing my research on you, Theo. So growing up on I believe you grew up on a farm as a child, and I wonder how much did that play a part in you getting into wine? Because so much of wine and winery, it's about being a farmer.
Well, let me clarify. I grew up in the city of Dallas. Mm-hmm. My father bought 10 acres of land when I was about 6 years old. So we spent a lot of weekends at the farm. We built a barn, the tractor was downstairs, and we had a little efficiency upstairs on top of the barn. And so we spent weekends. That's where I learned to drive a tractor at the age of 8. So that did have a tremendous influence on me. So when I moved to California to practice law, several of the partners in my firm that I was working with own vineyards. And so I figured, wow, this would be great. I could combine my farming skills and have a grape farm. I couldn't have livestock like my father did, but it could be a way of getting out of my left brain and exercising my right brain, out driving the tractor, pruning and doing the things that nature. So I got into the wine business because I wanted to be a grape farmer, not because I wanted to bottle wine.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. So I do want to get into Petite Syrah and the Association of African American Vintners, but I want to still hear a little bit more about your journey, if that's okay. Going back to you purchasing land back in 2001 and then planting Petite Syrah in 2003, all the way up to your the crazy story of your 2012 Petite Syrah.
Okay, well, you've done your research, obviously. So yes, I moved to California in the 1980s. And at that time, I was exposed to vineyards. I had never, ever, ever been to a vineyard in my life. And at that time, I was like, wow, this is kind of cool. So California and Texas are totally different. Texas land is much cheaper than in California. So it took me from the 80s to 2001, such that I was able to take money out of my home and buy 20 acres of land in the Yorkville Highlands of Anderson Valley, Mendocino County. And so people always said, well, why did you buy in Mendocino? Well, that's what I could afford. That's the bottom line. Then my law firm mentor, Barbara Diodoni, is the one who suggested that I look at Mendocino because I've been looking in Napa and Sonoma, and I just didn't have a big enough pocketbook for those places. But I'm glad I bought in the Yorkville Highlands because it has all of the pristine conditions that Napa used to have, you know, years ago. Now it's so crowded and congested. All of our properties are 20-acre parcels. So I bought the property in 2001. I inherited two sheep that couldn't catch before the close of escrow. I inherited 8 chickens, which I love because we had chickens in Texas and they lay some great wholesome eggs. But then the foxes ate the chickens. I also bought the property from an old English lady who had crazy crap cats. So and she let them live freely in her home while she was in England. And I'm allergic to cats. So I had to get people to clean up all the way from the baseboards to the floorboards. And the only reason I could buy the property, the house is wonderful, but because it was a dump and no one would buy it. And therefore I was able to get it for a price I could afford. So I then had to do soil digs. And I actually did soil digs doing escrow to make sure the property was suitable for growing grapes. And then after doing those soil digs, doing escrow, after we closed on the property, I hired Richard Thomas to come back and do further soil digs and an environmental study to determine what would be the best grape to grow. And I'll tell you, I'd never heard of Petit Sirah until he said that would be the best grape to grow on this property. Because I lose sun about 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening. We get all 4 seasons. So it gets too hot for Pinot or Chardonnay, and I'm a red wine drinker. Also, Zinfandel and Cabernet need full sun all day long. So Petit Sirah was the choice. And in 2003, I planted my 5 acres. I then had my first harvest in 2006. I was able to sell those grapes to a guy by the name of Mike Orfisal at Carlisle, who is really kind of a cult winemaker. You have to sign up to be on his sign-up list to get on his wine club list to even have a chance to buy his wine. I want his problem.
And then, by the way, it totally makes sense about not Napa, so expensive as well. And that's interesting for the listeners, and we'll get more into Petit Sirah in a second, because I want to you to talk a little more about just the attributes of that grape. But you're right, you have to have the right growing conditions for it. And then 2012 was really one of many, I imagine, but definitely one of the turning points for you in terms of making and representing your own wine.
Yes. I mean, when I went into this, all I wanted was to have Theopolis Vineyards on a wine bottle. And now I have that through Halcon Vineyards. They have Theopolis Vineyard listed as the vineyard from which they source. But that's all I wanted. Because again, I went into this because I wanted to be a farmer, not because I wanted to be a winemaker and sell bottles of wine. As you said at the beginning, you know, I have a full life.
Yeah.
And it's kind of hard to have a full life and also not only manage the vineyard operations, but also sell the wine once it gets in the bottle. So be that as may, I had Carlisle buying from 2006, 7, 8. Of course, everyone knows what happened in 2008. We went through the Great Recession. I'm in Mendocino. He's in Sonoma. You know, the buyer controls everything about the vineyard because that's how they make the best wines. Great wine starts in the vineyard. And so in 2009 and 10, I got a new buyer. And then I got another buyer in 2011 and 2012, a local buyer, because people, I got another great winemaker, but he didn't want to come all the way out to Yorkville Highlands on that little windy road. And so as a result, the buyer bought in 2011. And in March of 2012, he actually came to me and said, I just bought a Petit Terroir vineyard down the road. And so I will not be buying your grapes in 2013. I'm like, fine, no big deal, because Parker gives wine made from your grapes, a 96, your first harvest. You don't have any problem selling your grapes.
Right.
And so I'm fairly confident that I can sell pretty much anything. However, what I didn't anticipate was that Mother Nature would intervene in the fall of 2012, because he said he wouldn't be buying in 2013, but he would honor the contract in 2012. But that contract required that the grapes be picked at 24 bricks. That's the sugar level. We picked in the rain because we didn't want him to prune, and we picked at 22 bricks. We had 8 tons of grapes that we delivered to the then buyer.
Yep.
He rejected them out of hand.
Oh.
I had 8 tons with no home. As a result, I found a place right up the road in Hopland to actually crush them, because we had 24 hours to crush them, because we couldn't leave grapes on grape bins longer than that. So once we got the juice, I then inquired of that particular winery, you know, how much would it take to make wine? And what I found out is that I couldn't afford to make wine. I just couldn't, because I lost my shirt on real estate investments before 2008. They were doing quite well, but after 2008, tank. And so I had no money. And consequently, as a result of that, I bartered. I bartered to get the wines made. And so one of my neighbors agreed to make the wines under his label so he could sell the Petit Terroir and get paid for his services.
Yeah.
And I then bottled my Petit Terroir, my 2012 Petit Terroir, under my label. And as a result, I had 2 years, because, you know, red wine stays in barrels for at least 18 months, to, you know, raise money for bottles and caps and all the other expenses of making wine. And I'm happy to say that 2012 Petit Terroir won gold at the Sunset Magazine Company. So that is a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, you went through so much adversity just to get there. And of course, Mother Nature rarely ever cooperates. You mentioned something, and I think it's interesting for the listener, is just how important it can be, especially early on. If you can get high scores from someone like Robert Parker, just how much that helps your ability to sell that wine.
Well, you know, I am by nature a competitive person, okay? Right. I can't help it. I mean, I'm a trial lawyer. I like the victory. I like landing new clients. I like winning trials. I like the close of a deal, okay? And so when a Robert Parker or Vinius or Wine Enthusiast Magazine gives your wine 90 plus points, that's kind of like getting crowned in a beauty contest, because what they're saying is you are creating a quality product that I am going to recommend to the consumer. Now, there's some winemakers who never enter competition, but I do because really and truly, I have to tell you, I have learned a lot about wine since I've been bottling wine, but I am a real country girl, and the farming is what I love most about all of this. So it helps validate what I've said all along, that great wine starts in the vineyard.
Yeah, and it's, you know, and that, you know, I'm glad you admitted, you know, the competitive nature. I find that a lot of winemakers and winery owners, they lie. They say it's not about the competition. It's just about making a product that represents the land. And that's true. And it's the same for you. But I think some of them are lying. I think people are more competitive than they want to admit.
Well, you know, I can't be anything other than authentic, okay?
Yeah.
I've tried being someone else, but I can't do it. And people who know me will tell you I am not politically correct. I say what I feel, and I'm sorry if it hurts your feeling.
I'm curious about the difficulties you and Theopolis Vineyards that you faced and maybe faced because of the color of your skin in terms of getting your wines into stores, into distributors. And even though your wines were winning awards, maybe you weren't getting the attention that, you know, you would rightfully deserve for your product.
Well, you know, I don't use race or sex as the reason something didn't happen. So let me be very clear.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that my biggest issue, and I think the biggest issue for most African-American women and people of color making wine, is we're small producers.
Right.
Okay, as a small producer, most distributors don't have time for you. And, you know, unless we have the financial ability to scale, or we want to make product that is not as premium as I want to make product, then we are going to face two factors: price point and lack of volume. And distributors want low price points and high volume.
Yeah.
Neither of which is Theopolis Vineyards. So I have not been able to, up until this year, get distributors. However, I will tell you that I have been picked up in the last 6 months by a number of new distributors in states that I have been trying to get into before. I don't know what's changed, but I'm there. I will tell you that before May and June of this year, when the Black Lives Matter movement became, you know, really taken seriously by, I think, all people, Southern Glazers had picked me up in Florida because Michael Samuelson, a restaurateur in New York, was opening a restaurant in Miami. And he teamed with a restaurant group that was based in Florida, and they had multiple restaurants, and they went to Southern Glazers and said, we want to put Black wines in these restaurants. And that opened our door, and that process started back in December of last year. But most distributors don't want to do low volume. And I don't think our wines are that expensive. Because I have a friend who in Napa, he sells his Cabernet and his Petite for over $100 a bottle. I mean, I couldn't afford his wines. That's why I'm his friend.
It's so important to have friends who have lots of good wine. And I've been on the website, and it seems 38 to 44 seems to be the range. And I'm just doing this off the top of my head for your estate-grown Petite Syrahs.
Correct.
Yeah. And by the way, the problems you're having, that's a very common thing here in Ontario, where almost all the vineyards, they are all small. And like, there's almost none around here in Niagara, Prince Edward County, that make, you know, I mean, most of them would probably make around the same amount of wine as you. There are some larger ones that'll make a couple thousand cases, but it is the issue of being a small producer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the issue. That's why when you ask the question as to race or sex, I attribute it more to being a small producer.
Yes.
And most African Americans in this business are small producers.
Yeah.
And so that is a barrier that we have faced in this business.
Tell me, I believe you're on the Association of African American Vintners. I was wondering just a little bit about what the goal of it is and just sort of the mission statement for this nonprofit organization.
Well, I'm happy to say that I was the one who actually got the 501c6 status.
of course, I was
a charter member. Yes, I was a charter member of the Associated. I'm not a founder, but I was a charter member. And, you know, I was a member before I started selling wine. Okay? Because to me, we are greater when we bond together to build than to go about it as separate individuals. I always advocated that if we are small and if a distributor would take all of our wines, then they get the volume and the quality, and that could solve their concern. So that is sort of why, even as a grower only, I was very much involved. You know, obviously it is to increase the awareness of the existence of African-American vintners, to actually foster cooperation amongst its members, to educate the members, offer opportunities. As I mentioned, one of the biggest things I was trying to push through is bonding together to approach distributors to take all of our wines. We used to do a symposium every year, basically educating the public about our wines, educating the consumers. We did pourings. And one of the big things we did is we provided scholarships to people of color who were interested in careers in viticulture and enology and other aspects of the wine business. In fact, we have an upcoming program. In fact, I just got something in the mail. We are teaming. This is another thing that has happened that is very, very good. And I want to go ahead and plug this. I just got a Google alert that we, I have a Google alert of Theopolis Vineyards. And I knew that I was doing it, but I just didn't, I hadn't gotten anything about it is, but let me pull it up. There will be an event that will take place on Wednesday, October the 28th at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And it's going to be via some mechanism. I don't know.
Zoom, Google Share or something.
Yeah, something like that. Spencer Christian, you know, he was a KGO ABC 7 news guy, weather forecaster, and he also was on Good Morning America. He is going to be the moderator, and he's also a wine guy, I mean, a big wine guy. And the McBride sisters will be involved. I'm speaking as well as a guy that I have not met that recently joined the organization, Amirani. And we're going to be talking about the path to success as a wine brand, owning and distributing your wine brands. And that's going to take place. I will have it on my website at some point. So if you go to TheopolisVineyards.com, you'll be able to find out more information about that. But that's part of what the association does. We have a scholarship, and thank the Lord, since you know, the Black Lives Matter movement, we have had more traction than ever.
That's fantastic. And well, also something else to add to your plate of things to do.
I used to be the secretary of that organization, but I had to give that up.
Yeah, well, that's good. Every now and then, a couple hours of sleep is healthy. Tell the listeners, it's a grape I rarely talk about. And, you know, usually sometimes it'll be blended in with Zinfandel. But I was wondering if you could just, you know, for the listeners, the quality, what you can expect from a good Petite Syrah.
Well, I have to say, I love Petite Syrah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, as I said earlier, I did not know about that grape before I hired Richard Thomas, who was a professor of viticulture at Santa Rosa Junior College, doing the escrow process. And when I was trying to decide what I was going to actually grow. I was a cab person. I loved Zinfandel. I loved cab. I loved Malbec. I like big wines. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Well, our estate, Petit Terroir, is a elegant, I would say, big, bold Petit Terroir. And Petit Terroir is a big, bold wine. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
It is characterized by rich, ripe, dark fruit. It's full body. It's rich. It's full of blueberries, dark chocolate, currants, tobacco, black tea. It has tannins, but I try to calm those tannins a little bit, because a lot of Petit Syrahs are so heavy you want to cut your teeth with them, okay?
Yeah.
And, you know, Petit Syrah is everything but petite, okay? you know, Petit Terroir was de Rief. It's a Rhone blend. And, it is one of my favorites. It's one of these really wonderful, full body steak rib wine. I'm a Texan. This wine speaks my personality. Okay.
So then, by the way, I love that line. There's nothing petite about Petit Syrah, and you're absolutely right. It goes with Texas. It goes with ribs. It goes with steak. It's a perfect pairing. But it's interesting because I saw on your website you guys also have a Pinot program from Anderson Valley, Santa Lucia, and some of the locations. So how would you describe your Pinot program?
Tell you this. I have never been a big lover of Pinot because it's weak. And like I said, I'm a big girl. I like to have big, bold ones that are really reflective of who I am. And so, but, you know, Pinot in the United States is the red wine that is sold the most. Several of my loyal wine club members and friends says, you need to make a Pinot. And because I'm also very frugal, I hate to say this, but my 2014 Anderson Valley Pinot was made because, unfortunately, a family lost their patriarch. The two brothers had no clue what to do with their grapes. They waited to the last minute to try to sell them after the time that most people would be buying. And as a result, I got them for cheap. So right. I was able to play around with the 2014. I bottled it unfined and unfiltered. It came in, and like I said, they waited a long time, and a lot of people wouldn't take them because they were at a high Brix level, and with a high Brix level, you're going to have high sugar, and it's going to be higher alcohol content. And as a result, that 2014 Pinot Noir is higher alcohol. It says on the website, and I don't know if I can tell you this because you are recording, but you get a 1% grace period on your alcohol level.
Yes, you do.
And I took full advantage of that, well within the law. And so whatever it says on the bottle, add at least 9 more, 0.9 to it.
So okay? Round up, if it says 14.5 or 13.5, at the very least, round up.
Absolutely. And you know what? This is that Pinot War. I still have that. And you know the reason I still have the Pinot? Because I only took that too with me, and I sell my wine. Before COVID, I sold my wine by going on trips and, you know, having wine tastings and dinners and so on and so forth. And I would only pour this when I was able to explain, because this was bottled unfined and unfiltered with yeast. And people in America, I don't know how you are up in Canada, but people in America like their wine to be pretty. Everything's filtered and pretty. Well, people who love this wine, they call it my dirty wine. And because it's not clear.
Yeah.
But it is wonderful. It's lightly toasted oak, rose petals, cherry, raspberry, and of course, forest floor. But it is one of my best sellers now. I'm almost going to be sold out of that. In fact, a distributor just picked up a whole bunch of it. And I was like, wow, you're going to go all the way back to 2014. But it is very unique. It is a very unique wine. And so with the Pinot program, I do play around because that's not my love. So I have an Anderson Valley Pinot, which I just described. The next year, I stayed in the Yorkville Highlands. I did a 2015 Pinot Noir. I bottled it filtered. I didn't find it because I don't believe in extra stuff. I believe that the fruit should speak for the wine. That is my wine philosophy. Don't mess with it. Great wine starts in the vineyard. If you grow premium grapes, you will make great wine. And just let the expression of the oak, and I don't use any time any more than 25% oak because okay. I want the fruit to speak for the wine. And then 2015, I had one chef, we did a tasting. He said, you know, that Anderson Valley Pinot is unfine, but that's your ride and die. That's the girl you're going to take with you, got your back. But that 2015, that's the woman you take home to mama. She's elegant and refined. And so my 2017 Pinot is very much similar. I then went down to Santa Lucia Highlands and bottled a 2016. And that is probably the most traditional Pinot that I produce because I'm playing around with the Pinot program. And because of that, I can do that. And I just finished bottling a 2018 Santa Lucia Highlands and a 2019 Yorkville Highlands. And I think I'm going to stick with my Yorkville because the Yorkville is a little more full. It's still medium body, but it has a lot more character for me and my taste buds than the Santa Lucia Highlands. But if you are a traditional Pinot person, you want my Santa Lucia Highlands Pinot.
By the way, I love some of your descriptions. I don't think I ever remember anyone in Burgundy saying, this is the wine you take home to mom. I love it.
And also, remember, I'm a country girl. I am not a sommelier. I don't have any of those certifications. I just call it as I see it. You like it or you don't. There's certain characteristics of these wines. I talk about it for real people. I am not a wine snob. When people come to my tastings, they laugh because I break the wine down into, you like it? Here are the flavors. And then people ask me, well, I don't smell all that. And I'm okay. I was like, just keep drinking. You'll get it. Yeah.
But that's awesome. And that's kind of the point of this podcast is to make wine more fun, make it less intimidating. And you pretty much embody everything that I'm trying to do with this podcast. Did you ever find it difficult early on selling Petite Syrah just because you have to explain it a little bit more than Merlot or Cabernet Sauvignon or Chardonnay or Pinot or something like that?
You got it. Trust me. You know, people would come up to me and say, do you have a cab? No, I have something better than a cab. I have a Petite Syrah. Well, what's that? And then people get confused because they think Petite Syrah is the same thing as a Syrah or Shiraz.
Right.
They're not. Okay. You know, and so part of, well, I come from a family of educators. My father and mother were school teachers. My father ultimately became an assistant superintendent of school and a college professor. But education is in my blood. So I don't mind explaining it. And when they taste it, oh my God, it is like candy to a baby. And, you know, you win them over. And, you know, I have some friends who just didn't like Petite Syrah, but they like my Petite Syrah. And the thing that I like is that I get to educate people. I'm also a member of an organization called Petite Ra, I Love You, that was started by Joe Diaz. And it is an advocacy organization because, like you said, it is one of the grapes that people don't like. And there's been, you know, during this COVID situation, we've had people at home. So being able to educate them about this wonderful grape has been one of the main purposes that the organization has done. And as a result, you know, we've gotten some pretty nice reviews.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely, you have. And it is a great grape. It's a different one, but it's obviously like anything else. It's one everyone should try. And yes, again, for the listeners, it's not Syrah. It's not Shiraz. It's its own grape. It's its own profile. I'll leave you with this question, Theo, because I found it interesting. And it sort of encapsulates, I think, a lot of who you are. And I read this from Wine Enthusiast, that you are the sole salesperson, that when you are on business-related trips, you bring three suitcases. One has clothes, two has bottles of wine. And I was wondering if you could just tell me about your packing habits.
Well, I have a wine suitcase that I really broke down and bought. But, you know, the largest suitcase that you can take with you on a plane, you can pack that suitcase just like you're packing a box of wine. So, mm-hmm. You know, those crates,
yep,
that, not the styrofoam ones, but the ones that lay flat.
Yes.
And I actually brought wine with me today to Texas because I have some customers here that they prefer that I bring it than pay the shipping. So you put three bottles, you put a crate on, three more bottles, and you stack. And I fly a lot on American Airlines, so I get three suitcases for free. I put my suits and my makeup kit and my underwear and all that other stuff in the big suitcase, because usually I'm gone for a week or two, and I pack two cases of wine in the other two suitcases. And I do wine dinners, wine tastings all over the country.
That is fantastic. Hey, listen, first off, tell the audience again, first, the website for Theopolis Vineyards.
It is theopolisvineyards.com. And before I go, I want to mention, we also bottle a rosé of Petite Ra. That is a rarity. I think I'm one of a few that bottle that. And this is not your whippy rosé. This is we call it summer red, because it drinks like a red wine. It is a beautiful expression of petite. And I really think that when we bottle it in March of next year, we're going to bottle more, because it's been a best seller and we're down to five cases. So, and we're holding it back for wine club members. But I had to do that because that's another unique wine. We like to say that we produce some unique wines because we also do the Symphony grape. Have you ever even heard of the Symphony grape?
Okay, I was going to ask you about it, but I was feeling bad because I know how busy you are. I didn't want to take your time. Yeah, it's a cross between a Muscat of Alexandria and a Grenache Gris. But the only reason I know about this grape was I was doing my research on you in the vineyard. I had never heard of it a week and a half ago.
Well, it was created by Professor Omo. He was a professor of viticulture at the University of California, Davis. He created a lot of crossing grapes. And it is unique. It is so unique. We call it champagne without the bubbles. It is refreshing, very aromatic. A lot of the restaurants are replacing their dry Gewürztraminer and dry Riesling with this dry Symphony. So check it out.
Yeah, actually, that makes sense, because when just because I'm a nerd, I went on some of the videos and was watching people review your Sympathy grape wine. And just by listening to the review of it, I'm like, yeah, that seems to make sense as an alternative to a dry Gewürztraminer.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, I love what I'm doing. I hope you get my sense of passion. So
oh, God,
even
yeah.
though I may be busy, when I start talking about this stuff, I just get like so excited, I can't shut up. So just shut me up.
No, are you kidding? I'd go on, you know, for ages more. But okay, I'll end with this. What do you think is, what is the, I don't want to say ceiling, but where would you like to be? And I always ask this question because you're a small vineyard, 800 to 1,000 cases. But where do you see yourself in the next 5 years with Theopolis?
Well, in the next 5 years, I'd like to grow to approximately 2,000 cases a year. And I want to remain a small boutique winery. I think I can still be that at 2,000 cases, because I think you lose quality when you go more than 2,000, because we still hand pick our grapes. Last weekend, we picked the Symphony grapes, and I was right there on the tractor. I was the person driving the tractor down the road while they put the bins onto the other bins, the small bins onto the big bins that were on the back of the tractor. Let me be clear. And, you know, to me, that's my enjoyment. If we get more than 2,000 cases, I won't be able to do that. And furthermore, you know, I don't plan to retire from law anytime because I'm still having fun. I do sex, drugs, and rock and roll law. I mean, how would I leave that?
Yeah.
And so I would like to get to about 2,000 cases. And then at that point in time, who knows? There may be opportunities to partner with larger companies. I don't want to lose control, because when you lose control, you lose your brand. But I think the future is bright. I'm very optimistic.
Yeah. And you know what I appreciate is, it seems that the style of all your wines, it speaks to who you are. And I think a lot of wineries, they want to try to, you know, emulate Burgundy, and they get apologetic about being in California, and they say, no, we're Burgundian, we're light, we're elegant, we're not heavy. And you're like, no, these are the wines I love, and they're going to have more power than what you're going to find. They're not going to be weak, or, you know, these are going to be big, powerful wines, and you're unapologetic about it. And I think that's fantastic.
Well, I think I have a variety. The Symphony is very light and very aromatic, and it really is crisp and clean. Okay, so for those people who want to just be able to open the bottle and drink it without aging it or aerating, that's the Symphony. The Rosé Appétit, I will tell you, you know, when we bottle our rosé, I don't put it on the market to about 3 months later, because it actually ages well. And just guess what? Symphony is also one of the only white wines that age. In fact, I got an order a couple of months ago. I don't have the 2014 anymore. They wanted the 2014 because they were teaching the class to show how the crisp, rich flavor of the Symphony will last. This was a 2014, and they were pouring it in 2020. So, yeah, those are my lighter wines. The Pinot is a lighter wine, but my baby is the big Petit Sirah. And yeah, I'm unapologetic about its boldness.
Yeah, you know, yes, exactly. A well-made wine, it comes in all, you know, strength, sizes, and alcohol levels. So, yeah, absolutely. Theo, I really appreciate you joining me on the podcast today. I know how busy you are, and, you know, you're obviously a great daughter, helping out your mom and doing all this stuff at the law firm and making all this wine. So thank you so much for being a part of the pod.
Well, Matthew, it was my pleasure. And if you're ever in Northern California, text ahead, email ahead, and perhaps when COVID is over, we'll sit down and have some wine together.
I would love that. I've already put in a list together of all the names of people I need to visit once the borders are open. And here's one thing for sure. I know when I come visit you, that's going to be a hell of a lot of fun.
Oh, and you know what? I love Toronto and the Toronto Jazz Festival. So when that's back up, I may just see you in your hometown.
Oh, yeah! Listen, I live very close to where a lot of it happens. You know what? I have an extra bedroom, and we have a full wine fridge. And yeah, we can't wait for the Jazz Festival to come back. My girl was so disappointed when it had to be canceled.
And just so you know, but for COVID, I would have been in Toronto in August of this year, and I already had a wine tasting set up. Because we do have, my law firm, we have an office in Toronto.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Well, perfect. Well, then when the borders open, we'll absolutely have to get together, because I don't remember the last time I had a good glass of a Petit Sirah, and it's always fun trying new stuff.
Yeah, we're right at the Brookville place.
Okay, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. You are literally a 20-minute walk from where I live.
Yep. So we will definitely stay in touch.
Absolutely.
Take care and enjoy.
You as well. Hey, thanks everyone for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Stitcher, Spotify, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.